Just a couple weeks ago, I gave a sermon in which I mentioned Keith Richards, who is the famous lead guitarist for the Rolling Stones. I mentioned a passage in his autobiography where he talks about the early days of the Rolling Stones when they dedicated themselves to learning Chicago blues. And he said, we gave ourselves with a Benedictine dedication to learning this music. I told the people, I think you should give yourselves with that same kind of Benedictine dedication and singleness of purpose to the spiritual life. Okay, I also added, I said, please don't buy his autobiography for your confirmation kids as a present and say Father Barron recommended that you read it. I said, Keith wandered down a lot of bad paths, you know, and the people laughed. Well, after the Mass, I had breakfast with my sister and her family and my mother. My mother said, Bobby, I thought your homily was fine, but you should never have mentioned that awful Keith Richards, who's just the epitome of nothing. So she wasn't happy about that little citation. Now, as anyone who knows me well realizes, I'm a big fan of Bob Dylan. I discovered Bob Dylan when I was a teenager, and it's fair to say that his writing, his music, has had a decisive influence on the way my own imagination and mind have been formed, even in regard to God. And that's why in a lot of my books and a lot of my retreats and DVDs, I cite Bob Dylan quite a bit. In fact, in one of my recorded retreats, I referred to Bob Dylan as a hero of mine. Well, some people complained about that, and they said, well, come on, Bob Dylan was a drug addict, and Bob Dylan's thinking is a little bit, you know, off-kilter, and how could a Catholic priest be recommending him so enthusiastically? Another person that I cite all the time is Thomas Merton. I discovered Thomas Merton around the same time I first listened to Bob Dylan when I was a teenager. I read his wonderful autobiography, The Seven Story Mountain. And as you know, that's the gripping narrative of this young, very worldly man who undergoes a conversion, first to Catholicism, and then to the very rigorous life of a Trappist monk. Well, that story had a huge impact on me and influenced rather profoundly my own decision to become a priest. And so it's not surprising that I cite Merton a lot in my books, in my writings, in my video work, etc. Well, again, people have complained to me about that. They say, well, you know, Thomas Merton in his private life, even after his conversion, you know, did some ambiguous things, and in his own theoretical life, he seemed to drift in a more syncretistic direction toward the end of his life, maybe even toward Buddhism. And they say, how can you be recommending Thomas Merton or using him with such enthusiasm? Well, here's the thing. I think my mother was a little strong in saying that Keith Richards is the epitome of nothing, but I certainly agree Keith Richards is not a model in every aspect of life, certainly not in the moral area. More to it, though I deeply admire Bob Dylan, I certainly agree he's not a model of Catholic orthodoxy in every one of his opinions. Thomas Merton, you know, sure, there's some things, you know, many people in the 60s got a little bit mixed up, and there's certain things he said and did in the 60s that I wouldn't particularly recommend. Nevertheless, I would strongly defend my use of these figures in my own work as a preacher and teacher and evangelizer. How come? Well, part of it is this. To cite one quotation or one dimension of a writer or figure is not to give a wholesale endorsement to everything that person ever said or ever did. I mean, look, I'm a big fan of Abraham Lincoln. I cite Lincoln all the time. Well, Lincoln's theological opinions were hardly orthodox ones. His views on God are not ones that I would say are perfectly correct. Yet I cite him. I'm a big fan of Picasso, especially a lot of his early work. I think is very moving. Some of Picasso's work is deeply offensive. Look at someone like Martin Heidegger, you know, with Wittgenstein, the greatest philosopher of the 20th century. Well, Heidegger has been very influential on my own theological work. And yet I hate the fact that Heidegger, at one point in his life, was a Nazi sympathizer. My point is this. If we're limited to those people with whom we utterly agree in every intellectual area, and with whom we are in utter agreement morally, we'd be limited to citing Jesus and the Blessed Mother. Everyone carries with him or her some ambiguity. We'd be so radically limited if we thought that any citation involved a wholesale endorsement of everything someone had said or done. But there's more to it than that. And it has to do with the new evangelization. Okay, Keith Richards is not a saint. But Keith Richards has a credibility in the counterculture that a lot of saints don't have. And so my citation of Keith Richards might signal to somebody who would never otherwise darken the door of a church, it might say, oh, I'll listen to that. That's intriguing. Keith gives me an access to that world that the church rarely has access to. Same with Bob Dylan. I mean, is Bob Dylan perfectly orthodox in his opinions? Obviously not. But Bob Dylan has this massive credibility in the wider culture, a culture that is way outside the normal reach of the Catholic Church. I've told the story before about how in Word on Fire, I did a video about Bob Dylan, and it reached a young guy, 19 years old, who hated the Catholic Church, completely alienated from the church. But it brought him in to that video, then to other videos, and then to the website, and he's now becoming a Catholic. Well, that's how it worked. If I was citing only Catholic saints, I might never have gotten that young man's attention. Thomas Merton. Sure, he said and did things that I wouldn't be totally in agreement with, but Merton's got a credibility in this religious culture that's way outside the Catholic ambit. Maybe people who are deeply interested in Buddhism and Hinduism and Eastern religions would be intrigued enough by a mention of Thomas Merton to listen. You know, my model in this regard, actually, is Thomas Aquinas, my great hero. Thomas Aquinas in the 13th century, in his highly, you know, focused Orthodox Catholic work, cites, among many others, Moses Maimonides, who was a Jewish rabbi. He cites Aristotle, who was a pagan philosopher. He cites Averroes and Avicenna, who were Muslim philosophers. He cites Origen, a Christian theologian, many of whose opinions were condemned by the church. In other words, Aquinas ranges widely in the people he cites, and he's not restricted to those who are utterly orthodox in their ideas or their behavior. He's willing to use people who can give him access to a much wider culture and willing to find truth wherever it lies, even in the midst of maybe some erroneous opinions or some questionable behavior. My fear is that a hyper-fussiness about the moral and intellectual integrity of the people I cite would lock me, and then lock the church, into a kind of feedback loop, into this closed conversation where we only talk to people with whom we utterly agree. And see, that evangelically is just not going to fly. My overall point here is, just as Jesus said, go out to all the nations and announce the good news, and just as John Paul II said, we have to engage in a new evangelization. We've got to go outside the ordinary ambit of the church. I think the use of such figures, who might be maybe not strictly perfect in every way, is more than justified by the access they give us to this wider world as we try to evangelize.